Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Happy Party Friday, everyone. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, the True Straight Up, the Chuck and Julie Show, brought to you by
AmericasCitizenPress.com, great conservative website, and Denver Cenogenics and Dr. Julie McCallan.
All right, we got a great show for you today. We're going to have rogue strategists, as that's what Peter's website called, Jordan Anasopoulos. But before that, there are two people I really enjoy having on our program.
Me.
Julie. Julie is one of the most.
And he has to have me on because I'm the only one that knows how to work the Zoom thing.
She's the only one who knows. It's very, very complicated. Very complicated. And I don't know, do we have Dick on yet?
Thomas will let us know. And Dick Wadhams.
And Dick Wadhams. And I want to give my little intro once Dick appears.
Okay.
So, Julie, what else we got?
We could talk about the jobs report. I mean, apparently, even like when they were leading it live on the air, CNBC is like, ooh, that's low.
And Joe goes down, we got, you know, it's up. You know, we only lost one leg and one arm. We got one left. And it's just going great.
It's a great jobs report.
All right. Appears to we have Dick with us. Now, as I said, there are two strategists I love. Really look forward to having on the program. One on the Democratic side, which is our good friend Ted Trimpa, and the other is Republican strategist and former Republican chair Dick Wadhams. Now, one of them I agree with occasionally, the other I almost never agree with, so we'll go to the one I never agree with, but I love, and it's just a brilliant guy, Dick Wadhams. Dick, great to have you on.
Hey, Chuck. Hi, Julie.
Hey there. Thank you, sir, for coming on this Friday afternoon.
We appreciate it.
You know, let me actually give you a softball question first.
All right.
Off the bat. Yeah. But we started to talk briefly about the jobs report. So we got jobs report bad, poll numbers bad. You know, we're going to start arresting parents under the Patriot Act. I mean, what do you make of this sort of free fall of the Biden campaign these days?
Well, I think that's the right word, Julie. It is a free fall, and it's a justifiable free fall. And I think it started, well, I think there was starting to be some doubts in the minds of voters, but it really crystallized with the fiasco in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And then it's just been a steady stream since then. And I think people are understanding this guy is befuddled. He really doesn't know what he's doing, and he's incompetent. And I think people are finally starting to understand the far left nature of the Democrats who control Congress and the demands being placed on Biden and Manchin and Sinema by the far left. The question is, can he recover in a year? Yeah, he could. I don't think he will, because I don't think the news is going to get any better for Biden on the economy or anything else. So. I think he's in a terribly weak position. I mean, when you've got Terry McAuliffe in Virginia basically saying that Biden is a liability in that governor's race back there, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to recover.
Okay.
Well, the only traditional way to recover is start a war, and I wouldn't put him by him.
He did his best on that, actually.
Yeah, maybe he can go back to wag the dog, kind of a traditional one. But Dick and I are on the opposite ends of the Republican Party. I'm a grassroots guy, love Reagan, love the principles of our platform. Dick, where would you say, or I want to categorize you, because I probably wouldn't do it fairly.
Well, I consider myself a conservative Republican, Chuck. I mean, I spent 9 years with the most conservative senator in Colorado history and frankly in the U.S. Senate period, and that was Bill Armstrong. I worked for Senator Hank Brown, who was probably one of the most fierce fiscal conservatives in the Senate during his term there. Wayne Allard, who I ran both of his campaigns, he had one of the most conservative voting records in the Senate, something that was amply pointed out when he ran for re-election and he still won. And I was proud to run Governor Owen's campaign when he ran to cut taxes, improve education or reform education and improve transportation. He did those things. And that was a solid conservative agenda. So that's what I consider myself, and that's what I think I am.
Okay, well, I will say you probably are all those things, but you're also a representative of the establishment section of the Republican Party in Colorado. And it's an interesting time right now. Peter Boyle's on a show, and I love Peter, of course. He's a longtime good friend, is highlighting that almost daily when he's striking out. You're never quite sure who he's going to strike out next. A somewhat surprising move is he used Jason Saltzman to go after Christy Burton Brown.
He's funded by George Soros, a very progressive writer.
A real sleazeball, who apparently Peter hates, but is happy to use a Christy Burton. He brought you on the show to help him beat up Christy, but you, yeah. You're wily and you're tough and you're just going to, I want to give her the benefit of the doubt. Do you think she's guilty of some kind of sin against humanity? I'm not a fan of Christy right now, but Peter's attack on her is just absurd.
Well, I don't know if Peter's attacked her, but he's
let him answer.
He certainly raised a question. I talked to Christy directly about it. We were actually talking about some other things, but I am giving her the benefit of the doubt, Chuck. I think that she's done an outstanding job as our state chair. And I think looking back, she regrets being involved with that organization. That's my read of it. You'd have to get that directly from her. That's my interpretation of our conversation. And so I think she's doing a great job, and I look forward to her continuing to do that.
Let me interject here too, because, you know, like Chuck said, I've been critical a little bit of Christy Burton Brown, but this, I believe, just in fairness, Dick, is a completely unfair attack on her. She was involved with Joe Altman and the FEC United before election issues were even a topic. This was all way before. She had nothing to do and wasn't even involved when Joe Altman started talking about the election. And just so folks know, I'm going to use this as a promo. I think there's a lot more to that story than meets the eye. Eric Coomer, in a recent New York Times article, recently acknowledged he lied about a bunch of stuff that Joe Altman was saying was true. And Coomer was saying, no, that's not true. And then he said, okay, I guess it is true. And we're going to be talking with his attorney, Andrea Hall, on Monday. So just want to give folks a heads up before anybody makes any decisions on Joe Altman, let alone Christy Burton Brown. There's a lot there, I think, that people are not hearing about. Let me just put it that way.
Well, when FEC started, it was really to get businesses going in Colorado.
Yeah.
It's a very pro small business group. And as things morph, they morph. But she was not part of the thing,
which the controversy.
I mean, you think the election was just a Jim Dandy wonderful thing, and I think there was massive fraud across the United States, and I think there was some fraud here in Colorado, notwithstanding our chair saying it's a gold standard. Whether that's enough to overturn the election, I don't know. And whether the machines are crooked or not, I don't know. I don't have the least about idea one way or the other. But I think, you know, you can criticize Christy Burton Brown for just being one more chairman who goes to the establishment, and you guys suck every chairman. The grassroots goes out and we work for chairmen like Steve House, and they turn the day they get in the door. Christy Burton Brown was a grassroots person. She's now become just the establishment again. Same old, same old, same old. And it's tiring and it's old, but that's the way it goes here in Colorado. And there is a Trump faction, MAGA faction, which I think is fairly huge. And the people who don't like Trump, and I put you in that category. I don't know if you put yourself in that category.
Well, first of all, Chuck, I voted for him twice. I supported his tax cuts, his deregulation agenda, his judicial appointments were outstanding on the Supreme Court, his federal judges, including the two he put on the court here, who were good friends of mine and two of the smartest people I've ever known in my life.
What about his immigration policy? Immigration.
His immigration policies. He got control of the border. No previous president had. I like all those things, but frankly, you're right. I don't like him as a person. I think his behavior various times of his presidency was reprehensible, and I think it was particularly reprehensible, and frankly, I think dangerous since the election. And I think he lost the election because of his own behavior. I think he should have won re-election, but not because of voter fraud, because of his behavior.
Okay. Let's go to the other one, which I was spent a summer canvassing the state for the opt-out. And then
after those people don't know, the Colorado Republicans faction of the party wanted to opt out of the open primary.
And my biggest problem with it is Catherine Murdoch is now the biggest contributor to Republican primaries. There'll be no conservatives left in the Capitol. Half of them will be gone this next election cycle as she pours in $500,000 a race. And so you won't have a conservative, you won't have your Republican Party. You'll just have a shadow of a Democratic Party. And why we let Democrats roll every aspect of our lives, including the Republican Party, is because the establishment thinks the common man is a disgrace in Colorado. They don't like MAGA, and they don't like, you know, average everyday working people. They find them reprehensible. And so that's the battle we have endlessly. And they've got all the money, and we just have all our shoes and our voices and our whatever courage we have to fight against it. But down in Pueblo, which I thought was a great meeting, because I think 84% of people showed up. And everybody said, nobody will come to Pueblo. And everybody did. We lost by a 60-40 margin, but most of the people who attended were with us. Though, as always, the establishment had their proxies ready to go. But at the end, two people got up, two of the opposite ends of the spectrum. John Fielding, who represents the establishment in most things, John got up and gave a wonderful encouragement. We set up a fund to litigate and get out of having Republicans run their primaries through a corrupt Secretary of State. And Charles Heatherly came up with a similar resolution, although differently. And that got 100%. His got 100% of the people, 100% of the most factious group you ever saw. And yet...
You guys united the party.
We united, and yet, Dick, you came on Peter's show and hoped that chairman ignores the will of 100% of the Republicans. Why? Why would you want her to ignore the will of all of her constituents?
I think a lawsuit is dumb. And I think it would be just as dangerous as that vote in terms of eliminating primary check. That's how I feel. You and I disagree on this. That's all I can say.
But you disagree with 100% of the Republican Party.
Clarify and jump in here, because from what I understand, what they vote, what the lawsuit would be about is the requirement that they have to have a 75% a supermajority and an unreachable supermajority to try to change something like that. And to me, it seems like that's more of a constitutional issue. I mean, I understand it's about the primary, but I would think that would be a good thing for Republicans to get rid of, even if they don't in the end get out of the open primary, but just to get rid of that kind of requirement on things and to make it clear you can't impose that kind of requirement on us again. I mean, don't you think that would be a good idea?
No, I think you and I, and Chuck, you and Julie, I fundamentally disagree with you on this. That's just all there is to it.
But you fundamentally agree with the Republican Party and 100% of its members as represented down in the assembly. So, I mean, if you view yourself as a conservative Republican and you are against what 100% of the Republicans are for, isn't that kind of a contradiction?
I think the lawsuit would be stupid. That's all I saw. That's all I'm going to say about it.
We love to debate. That's the whole reason.
He's not debating.
But you acknowledge, do you not, that everyone from the head of the ACLU here in Colorado to John Eastman to other scholars all agree that the provisions are unconstitutional. So even if the head of the ACLU thinks it's unconstitutional. All constitutional scholars across the country, it is still a dumb idea?
The ACLU does not determine what I think about things, Chuck. I disagree with you on that.
Let me ask you then this, because we disagree on a lot of things.
And we agree on some things. And I love having them on because I don't get to have debates with people too often. So it's a lot of fun to have somebody very bright and intelligent to have. Let me finish my kind of little
you're kind of diatribe.
Yeah, my diatribe. But you know, that's why I have people on. I don't need an echo. I love having people, Dick, who have, you know, fundamentally disagree on some things. And that's okay. That's what democracy is about, even within the party.
Can I ask my next question then?
As long as the softball.
No, because we're going to probably disagree on tactics too. And just so you know, we're going to have George Anthonisopoulos on next, who I think has a little bit of a different take. And we would have tried to have all four of us on, but that gets just way too confusing.
Dick is worth having him on alone.
But you know, given all the stuff we were talking about with Biden being so bad, right? And to me, it seems like then Republicans, at least on a national level, have a really good opportunity here. It seems to me in Colorado, people still don't think we do have a great opportunity. That, I mean, you know, you've heard Chrissy Burton Brown calling people up and say, hey, would you consider running for this? They're like, no.
Why
is that, Dick, that you think that in Colorado, and maybe you disagree, number one, do you think we do have a great opportunity to maybe take that U.S. Senate seat? The governor's seat, the treasurer's seat, or not? And if so, why yes and why no?
I think we do have an opportunity in 2022. I think POTUS is vulnerable in many ways. That war chest of his that comes out of his personal checking account is very daunting. But I think that if the national environment gets as bad as I think it might, and we field a strong candidate with a strong campaign, I think they could make that really interesting. I think Senator Bennett's numbers are very soft. And once again, a strong candidate could take out Bennett. I think we could win the 8th congressional seat with the right candidate. I think that I haven't looked at great detail at the legislative maps that are going to come out. But it appears to me that the state Senate could be in play. The House is a little different. House looks much more different. But Chuck and Judy, let me just tell you one of the things I think is different today with our party and why, and the difference it was from when I rattled off all those races that I was involved with at that one. Governor Owens, once I ran his first campaign, the second campaign, but was a joke. I mean, the Democrats conceded the election to him for his re-election campaign. But both of those Allard races were really hard. They were very hard. But I think this is the difference between the party then and today. Then our party was interested in winning elections, frankly. It was not as concerned about all these intra-party battles, calling each other rhinos I never even heard the term establishment when I was doing our campaign. You might have seen the column I wrote for the Denver Post. Just when Senator Allard asked me to run his campaign in 1996, he said we were having a very tough primary with a very popular attorney general. And he said to me, Dick, whatever we do in the primary, we have to do it with constantly thinking about the unaffiliated we're going to need to win a general election. Because the nomination is not worth having if we don't run a campaign that is capable of winning a general election. And I mention that, Chuck and Julie, because I've heard a couple of people, frankly, from your side of the party, because you guys are talking about your side of the party, who have gone on the radio. I've heard the conversation or heard the comments that, well, it was easy to win back then. All you had to do was get the Republican vote out. And I'm thinking, well, they either were not paying attention in those days, or they didn't know anything about what was going on. When Senator Allard won that election in 96, and I know you guys are probably, I'm boring you with this history, but it really does matter.
No, I was around.
I wasn't born yet. No,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. I was around.
Okay. You guys want to talk or do you want me to talk?
You go ahead.
I said I was around. Okay. That's all I said.
Yeah, no, you go ahead.
All right. Thank you. When Senator Allard got ready to run in 1996, there had been 14 elections for U.S. Senator and Governor from 1972 to 1994. And Republicans had only won three. And they were the two elections that Senator Armstrong won and the one election that Senator Brown won to succeed Armstrong. We had lost six consecutive elections for governor and five elections for a U.S. Senator during that period of time. It was not easy to run and win. It was hard. We had a lot of candidates who fell short and with accompanying campaigns during that time. But for the first time, I think that we had a candidate who really could see the broader picture. And we never attacked Gail Norton. Not once did we attack Gail Norton. We wanted her to come on board after that primary, 2 years later. And Wayne Allard won an election nobody thought he could win. And by the way, when I hear about from people on your side of the party that you are talking about,
right.
I love it when you talk about how the establishment doesn't know how to fight. Really? Why don't you ask Tom Strickland if he didn't feel my boot up his ass in both of those elections? Why don't you talk to other Democrats who I helped defeat over the years? 2 years later, Bill Owens was elected governor for the first time, first Republican governor in 28 years. He was reelected. He's the only governor in 50 years now. I think he was a pretty darn good conservative governor. I know a lot of people disagree with a couple of things he did late in his second term. I wasn't there then. But the first term, we accomplished everything. I mention this because we had candidates who were interested in winning general elections and not fighting intra-party fights all the time and looking internally. We were looking externally at the Colorado electorate and figuring out how does a conservative Republican win an election in a very competitive purple state like Colorado, because it was purple. It was never red. It's never been red.
Yeah.
It's always been purple. And now it's getting blue. And so let me bring it back to the lawsuit now. This lawsuit, all this crap about eliminating the primary, it's all looking inward. It's not looking at how to win an election. And by the way, Chuck and Julie, I will admit, the so-called establishment has put up some pretty crappy candidates too. I mean, but I will also say it was the Tea Party that nominated, Dan Mays in 2010.
And why do they nominate? Why do they nominate him as opposed to someone who's caught plagiarizing, attacking an old guy?
I'm not justifying. Listen, I'm not justifying that, Chuck. But the Tea Party was the driving force behind Dan Mays. The Tea Party and the Trump folks were the ones who rallied around Darrell Glenn and that pathetic campaign he ran in the general election after winning the primary. Both sides have put up bad candidates. Yes. I'm telling you, the ones I was involved with were candidates who wanted to win, and that's what we were there for.
Well,
somebody in the ass in the primary.
Well, let me ask you this: is Heidi Gnall?
Is she
a great fighter?
I don't know yet. She's never.
Do you like her?
I like Heidi a lot. Let me tell you the other problem we've got right now.
Okay.
What is the common thread? And Chuck and Julie, you both have been around, and I know you're going to know what I'm talking about. Common thread between Armstrong, Brown, Allard, Owens, Ben Campbell, for that matter, after he became a Republican, and Cory Gardner, is that they had all served in the state legislature. And then they went into Congress. And Bill Owens, Casey, became state treasurer. I don't think that's a requirement to run for statewide office in Colorado. I don't think the voters sit there and go, well, I'm going to vote for him because he was in public office before. But let me tell you what I think it does do, because having run a few campaigns, this is my conclusion. It prepares those candidates for those big races. Would Wayne Allard have been a very good candidate for senator if he had just gone from his veterinary office into that? No, he wouldn't have been. Would Bill Armstrong have been a great Senate candidate when he left?
Walker Stapleton, who is an absolute establishment.
He was a horrible candidate.
He ran for treasurer. He was treasurer. He was a good treasurer for the state. He was everything. You backed him, I assume.
Hey, Chuck, let's just back up for a minute. I was not involved in his campaign. I didn't support him. I voted for him because, I mean, I wasn't going to vote for Jared Polis, but I did not have anything to do with Walker Stapleton. And frankly, I share your opinion of him.
Well, so there. Okay, Bob Beaupre. Bob Beaupre ran for Congress. He had everything you set up. He was an establishment candidate that you all loved. What was wrong with poor Bob Beaupre?
I had nothing to do with Bob Beaupre or his campaign. I voted for him. But you're right. Bob failed to make a compelling case for governor. Yeah. I have talked until I'm blue in the face within our party in speeches I give, in columns I write for the Denver Post, about when you run for governor, you have to have a specific agenda. The secret to Bill Owens' success in 1998, and by the way, that was not a good year. That was Republicans took a bath in 1998 because of the impeachment of Clinton. And you can go back and look at what happened nationwide. Bill Owens won the election for governor because he had a very specific agenda that we announced before the primary: cut taxes, improve education, and reform education, and improve transportation. And we had specific policies behind each one of those points. I have talked since I'm blue in the face. My friend Bob Beaupre, who I do respect and who I do like very much, but this is the brutal truth about Bob. Bob did not come up with any kind of an agenda to be governor of Colorado. I don't know why. I was not involved in his campaign. I had no relationship to the campaign. I watched it from afar. But you are right, Chuck and Julie. You and I agree on the fact we have nominated some mediocre candidates who had bad campaigns. I agree with you. But what I am saying, the times we have been successful in this state, we have nominated candidates who were ready for the task. They had been run campaigns at the state legislative and congressional level or other statewide office, and they were ready for it. They were ready physically. They were ready emotionally, substantively, in every other way, financially, in every other way, in terms of being able to raise money. And we haven't had that. But more important, they were looking at the bigger picture. And all I see right now in my party is just a bunch of people who want to kick the shit out of each other all the time, calling each other rhinos and establishment and everything. And frankly,
why don't we go to your statements about us, not you individually, but your good friend, Peter. We're the crazies. All the grassroots are crazy people. They're insane. They're extreme. They're militia. They're dangerous. That's what all you put out.
I mean, not Dick,
but the establishment part. They love to scream at us and put us down and denigrate us.
Well, it goes both ways is what we're saying. Because we only have about 3 more minutes. We could have him on.
We should have booked him for the whole show. He's so good.
Real quick, ask you this, Chuck. I mean, because we have time for maybe 2 questions.
Well, then you better hear it quick.
And I agree, the Democrats do a much better job at building a bench, right? I mean, they're masters at it. Who do you see anywhere in the state legislature? I mean, I'm just asking, any picks that you have?
Yeah, who do you like?
That you think, well, hey, this person could be, or how do any candidates out there who you think, hey, maybe this is somebody to look at?
Yeah.
For anything.
Frankly, Chuck and Julie, I don't know. I'm not a lobbyist. I don't hang around the legislature. I mean, I'm just not familiar who the talent is in the legislature. Okay. But what I do know, it hurts our party right now that we don't have, I think it hurts our party that we don't have a member of Congress who is like a Bill Armstrong, a Hank Brown, a Wayne Allard, or a Cory Gardner, somebody who's ready to go in the big game. And that isn't there. And I don't know who is. I think Heidi might have the ability to go forward. We'll see. But
do you like Lauren Boebert?
There's no way. Huh?
Do you like Lauren Boebert?
Lauren Boebert.
I do like Lauren Boebert. I do not think she could win a statewide election, though. Doug Lamborn. And we've already nominated once Ken Buck, and frankly, he should have won, but he didn't. I think Lauren Boebert, I like her very much. She could not run statewide.
Well, we could. I mean, I wish we should have reserved the whole hour because it's so much fun to see the various views.
All the people want to ask you questions too.
Yeah, they all want a piece of you.
Thank you.
Well, let me thank him, Julie, because I was wondering. I really appreciate you coming on because we're always going to have a spirited discussion. You never back down. You never just say, "Oh, I don't want to take tough questions." And so I greatly admire you, and I thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you, Chuck and Julie. It's always fun.
All right, thank you. Dick Wadhams there. Right. And Thomas, now if you want to go ahead and call George Anthonisopoulos. Guys, we see all your comments. We'll have to talk about it later. Everything from Earth to Wadhams, Trump took out Kaufman, to Charlene, this guy is the rhinoist of the rhinos, Ken Buck is a turncoat. There was another one that, you know, Dick is talking about.
Yeah, but give him credit
about.
For coming on our
show. Yeah, no, you know, there's certain things that Dick says, and I guess the only thing, and I know it's not fair because he's not on now to respond, but I would just simply go ahead and say, one of the things I've noticed is that the establishment only wants to not fight when it's going their way, right? And it's like they want us to all be unified as long as they unify behind them, and it never goes the other way. They, you know, the donors, you know, if Tom Tancredo were to get the nomination, no one was going to give him any money, right? I mean, it only goes one way, and that's the biggest problem. And I think that's the real reason, frankly, that a lot of the grassroots people like us are sick of the establishment because it does only go one way. It's like, if you aren't going to play my game, then we're all going to pick up the ball and go home.
They do.
They literally
go home. It's unity as long as they call the shots.
Right, right. So if anybody wants to weigh in, if you want to unmute yourself real quick while we're trying to get George on the phone, go ahead or call in real quick, 888-627-6008. I do want to, again, kind of promote the show on Monday, this Joe Altman lawsuit. He's being sued by Eric Coomer, the Dominion guy, for defamation. But there's some very interesting rulings coming down by the judge. It all stems around Joe Altman's claim that he was able to get on a Zoom call where he heard a guy, Eric from Dominion, say that Trump wasn't going to win. It was an Antifa phone call, that Trump wasn't going to win, and that he knew it, that he had taken care of that somehow, right? So in a defamation, and so Eric Coomer is suing Joe Altman saying he defamed him. Well, in a defamation lawsuit, truth is a defense.
In theory.
So you'd think the number one basic question would be, Eric Coomer, were you indeed on that phone call? And guess what? The judge won't let them ask that question. The judge won't let them ask the basic question that is at the heart of the lawsuit.
That's our judicial system today.
And not only that, but Eric Coomer had a completely disastrous deposition, which you can't read the record of it, but we are going to be talking to people about what he said. There's no gag order on it. And it was filed, Sandra, in Denver. Go figure.
And it has a very much of a woman judge who marched with Antifa.
She marched with Antifa and BLM, for Pete's sakes. But so she sued. Eric Coomer had such a disastrous deposition that she sealed it. She suppressed it. I guess she didn't seal it. She just suppressed it, right?
She sealed it. You can't get a hold of it. You can't apparently get hold of virtually anything this year because she sealed it all.
It's bizarre what's going on there. Judges. And bizarrely, there was a New York Times article
New York Times Sunday Magazine article, which goes on forever.
Eric Coomer acknowledges where first he was saying, Joe Altman is just a liar. I did not post pro-Antifa postings and support Antifa on my Facebook page. I did not trash Donald Trump on my Facebook page. I didn't put all this stuff, everything that Joe Altman says, I put on my Facebook page. And he wrote an editorial in the Denver Post saying complete fabrication. Well, in the New York Times article, he admits, well, I guess it's that part is true. I lied about that. I did have pro-Antifa stuff. I did have anti-Donald Trump stuff. I do know that that was really bad for somebody who works for Dominion Voting Systems to be doing. I know all of that is bad, but I did it anyway. And the New York Times is like, so he's the victim. And it's like, what? Anymore, guys, I become extremely suspicious when the New York Times comes out ahead of this deposition. They knew it was going to be disastrous, and they're trying to spin it into somehow Eric Coomer is he's the good guy because he's the bad guy. It's like, what? So when they start spinning stuff like that, we've seen it over and over again. The more they start screaming, lie, 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 you denier, you denier, you denier, the more it turns out to be absolutely true, right? So look at the laptop, Hunter Biden laptop, the Trump-Russia stuff, COVID. No, it was natural origin. Anyone who questions that has to be banned from YouTube. So we're going to start getting into the truth of that, because all of a sudden I'm like, that's pretty darn interesting. You want to read some of the comments here? Oh, why was this filed in Denver when Coomer lives in Chaffee County? You know, that's a good question, because they filed a lawsuit against against Sidney Powell, the Gateway Pundit, Altman.
Lots of them. And so they tried to get it out of city and county of Denver. And of course, the judge said, no, no, we love it right here in the city and county of Denver. They apparently have a judge who's really just.
And why didn't you take off her case? Well, there you go. She would have to. And she's like, I'm not taking myself off of this case.
This is my case.
So
your judicial system working hard for you.
That's right.
Impartial.
Okay, he can't seem to get hold of George. Let me know. I'm almost positive I gave you the right phone number. I do know George actually is working for a living. What we can talk about though a little bit is.
Well, why don't you check the number, Julie?
Okay.
And I'll talk for a second. Yes, and the judicial system these days is a strange animal. I mean, they're trying to disbar John Eastman because he represented Trump and everything else. So just like everything else has become politicized, the judiciary has become highly politicized, and they're appointing highly activist judges who feel no desire to even appear impartial, just like Secretaries of State. It used to be the Secretary of State wanted to show to everybody that he or she was as fair as she could be to everybody. No, not Jen Ellis. She goes to Planned Parenthood for her comments. So it's a strange time we have these days. And I don't think it's going to get any better anytime
you
soon.
You keep talking. Let me do this.
Julia is touching using her magic hands.
I have to text
work that work this this thing. She's sending the number, and hopefully it's this time it's correct.
I think it did.
We do have sometimes operator error here,
particularly on
also
Friday.
No, that was Julie.
Well, you know, one of the things that we'll talk about this a little bit, because one of the reasons we invited Joe on, and it's interesting how
we put his lawyer on.
Pardon me,
Joe.
No, George. Is okay. And again, you know, Peter Boyle is a good friend of ours, but where he used to refer to on his show as George Athanasopoulos, he was the A man, he was a great strategist. Now he's being referred to as a rogue Republican strategist. So now we have rogue strategists and others.
And other strategists, non-rogue strategists.
You know, here's the thing I would say, that this is my free advice to anybody who wants to run for office, I would be jumping all over the parental issue. Mark Levin had a great thing on his show and on his website. He's talking about where this whole, the Department of Justice deciding to use the Patriot Act against parents was not like there was a whole conspiracy, frankly, around that. The Biden people, according to Mark Levin, were like, oh my God, we're tanking everywhere. People don't like us. And people are complaining at school board meetings about us. What can we do about this? And apparently had a meeting and said, well, who can we get to complain about the parents? And they're like, I know the teachers union. They're like, brilliant.
Yeah.
So they had the teachers union write a letter saying, hey, we're all terrified of the parents. So can you maybe do something about it? And they said, let us think. Blah, blah, blah. I know the Patriot Act. We'll keep them under surveillance. And that's how that whole thing came about. It wasn't just that the teachers union spontaneously did it. This was the Biden administration
reaching out.
Oh, we do have George. Okay.
No. It says, oh, wait, hold on. We're not sure we have it with George or not. It's all unclear.
Hold up.
Facebook can go down, we can have
But I mean, I think that's interesting when you think about, just when you think it's not a conspiracy, it is a conspiracy, but I think it's going to be like the vaccine and the mask mandates. I think it's going to backfire. I think that you have a bunch of parents right now who are upset about what's going on in the schools. And even more than that, I would say they're upset that they have school boards literally telling them, it's not up to you what we teach. You don't have a say goes on in our schools.
Parents?
I go back to why the heck we have cameras, right? And they're not surveillance cameras, they're open cameras. If you take your dog to doggy daycare, right? There's a camera there so you can see what your dog is doing. If you take your child to a daycare, most daycares now have cameras there so you can see what's going on. It's not to do surveillance, it's just to see what's going on. I think we need cameras in every classroom in America. That way the parents can see. Can you imagine?
The only places they appear to have them in the bathroom stalls.
Right.
But now, talking about that, we have a rogue strategist, George Athanasopoulos, whose name I butcher, but the only one butchers it more is Peter. George, how you doing?
I'm doing well, but you said speaking of, and you were talking about bathroom stalls, and then you brought up my name. Should I be offended?
So what have you done?
To
all of a sudden,
poor
now,
Billy.
Now
you're a rogue strategist.
And what exactly is it? I thought you were the peacemaker, George.
Yeah, what happened to the peacemaker guy?
Listen, I don't know. Maybe my PR department needs to get their act together. I thought I was the peacemaker. Now I'm a rogue. I don't know what I
rogue
did.
Strategist. I mean, a rogue strategist is very ominous sounding.
It is. Maybe I should get a T-shirt with that. Business card, rogue strategist.
Well, let me ask you, we had Dick Wadhams on earlier, and he did a good job. And while we disagree about a lot of things, we appreciate him coming on. But I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Tim. We all agree that this has been awful for, awful. The Biden administration just is bad and is in free fall and getting worse, which gives Republicans an opportunity.
How do you get worse in free fall?
You finally hit. Crash, yeah,
oh,
crash.
Okay.
And so there is an opportunity for Republicans. Is there, in your opinion, an opportunity for Republicans in Colorado? And if so, what do we need to do? And if not, what do we need to do? Coming from the rogue strategist.
Well, I don't know if I have credibility as a rogue, but.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's go back to 2010. The redistricting and reapportionment was so bad for Republicans that this time around, even if it still skews for the Democrats, but less so, we'll pick up seats. If it's impartial, we'll pick up seats. If we are good at what it is we do, we'll pick up even more seats. So just based on redistricting, we should be able to pick up 3 to 4 House seats, and we'll call it 2 to 3 Senate seats. And that's just doing the same thing we've always done, because the maps were so disadvantageous to Republicans based on, and by the way, thanks, Ryan Cole, you could have challenged it. You didn't. That's a whole nother story, but we'll do better just because of that.
Well, apparently from everyone I hear, the maps aren't a whole lot better. They're pretty bad.
The congressional district. Yeah.
No, the congressional one's okay as far as Republicans are concerned, but the state one, which it was everybody was hanging their hat on from the people I know, it's not looking a whole lot better.
It certainly is not worse. That much
it can't
I know.
Be, but then, it can't, well, it can be because the Supreme Court took
it
in its own hand.
Everybody and their mother, except the Republicans, is challenging it.
Yeah, so they
let me ask you.
So they can change it themselves.
That should give you an idea on who is set to benefit. If everybody but the Republicans are challenging it, then come on.
Let me ask you this.
Let me get your views on the statewide races. I mean, do you think that the Republicans have a reasonable opportunity to pick up the governorship or the U.S. Senator?
It's October.
Okay.
By December, I will tell you who will win or lose. And it's based on the fact that in Colorado, because we don't have a chain of custody requirement for ballots, ballot harvesting is legal. In order to ballot harvest, you have to have a ground game. In order to build a ground game, you have to build it ahead of time. It takes time. If Republicans haven't begun building a substantial ground game, I mean substantial, by December,
yes,
then we've already lost November.
And I'm going to use this point to underline that, George, because I want you to comment on that. Because
I haven't been seeing any, because I'm on the executive committee, but not to give out any secrets, but I haven't seen any huge expenditures for ground game.
And let me, because I noticed something today. So I will say this, Christy Burton Brown is doing a good job on social media. She tweets out numerous times a day. She's kind of hitting hard on Jared Polis and on Michael Bennett, but I just want to point this out and keep doing that. But big giant but, Christy Burton Brown has 2,500 Twitter followers. Okay. Michael Bennett has 52,000 Twitter followers. So that means that every tweet he puts out, Michael Bennett reaches 50,000 more people than Christy Burton Brown. We are not going to win this race with clever, although they're clever, tweets, right? And I would hope that Christy Burton Brown is only tweeting about Michael Bennett when she's taking a break from building the ground game. I mean, if they better be putting in 100 times more the effort on a ground game, it seems to me, and trying to counter the built-in advantage that the Democrats have given themselves in elections in Colorado, you know, that's way more important than clever tweets. Tweets are the kind of thing make you feel like you're doing something, but you know what? She's got 2,500, he's got 52,000, you know, but what's your guess or your suspicion on whether that's happening?
I mean, here's the deal. Political Twitter, you're not going to convince anybody of anything. So right. It's good to get a statement out, but you're not persuading anybody. As for the ground game, I would turn to Chuck and say, hey, Chuck, as a member of the executive committee, what you should do is move the executive committee to authorize funds to start opening field offices, storefront field offices, the kind of office that voters drive by and they go, oh, that's where the Republicans are. Not the kind that are hidden on the fourth floor of a nondescript office building that even when you know the address and have been there before, you still have difficulty finding it. So
let me correct you on what you may be under a misunderstanding of. According to our legal counsel, no one may approve any changes to the budget unless they've been prepared ahead of time by the chair. Well, they're not allowed. Only the chair may propose changes. That alone. The executive committee is there to advise and help them. But we can't, you know, an earlier effort was to give some money for minority outreach. No, we couldn't do that because that's only the chair may do so. So if you're under some misapprehension of how the Republican Party actually works,
which I suspect you're not really.
Yeah. I was going to go down a road of ridiculing attorneys, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, Chuck.
You don't have clean hands. You don't have clean hands.
I don't. I'm married to an attorney, but it's
even worse.
Here's the thing. Talk to Christy. She knows the importance of a ground game.
Will you talk to her?
Well, she doesn't want to talk to Chuck. Me and Chuck are not like this. Well, you know what? Here's the thing.
Yes, George. I've actually brought it up quite a few times. And I said to her and the chief officer, have you ever run a campaign that had ballot harvesting? And the answer was no. I mean, Christy.
Well, they have. They just haven't participated.
Yeah, they haven't. Christy took her parents' ballot in one day, and so I said, "Well, this is a whole election. It's everything." And I don't think my words fell on fertile ground.
And George, let me ask you this, because I know what I think, but I want to get your opinion there too. It doesn't take a genius. Even though I can figure out we need a ground game. You look at what the Democrats are doing. They have, and by ground game, what you said, it's field offices, people making contact with people, people knowing where to go to harvest the ballots in the first place. And I think we need to be much more, smarter about it than we're being. Why? So it's not a genius. It's not like people go, you're kidding me. I hadn't thought of that. Why is it, do you think, that the Colorado Republican Party just doesn't do it?
I know.
All right, let me ask George.
Well, okay. Why they haven't done it in the past, it's right. Easy. It's hard because it takes time and effort where mailers are quick and easy by comparison, and the margin is better for easy things. And it is somewhat expensive because it takes money to pay rent, office supplies, people. It takes a lot more. And if you look at the overall expense, if you look at the amount of money that Walker Stapleton's campaign and the RGA spent on television commercials, you're like, oh, if they put that in the ground game, we probably would have gotten several percentage points, you know, better returns for each Republican candidate down ballot, but we didn't because they're not very smart. But really, it just comes down to the fact that it's hard. It's hard work.
Yes.
See, I mean, I have an even worse idea than you guys. I think, contrary to what Dick Wadham says, is the reason they won is because their candidates wanted to win. That's not true. What's true, I believe, in the Colorado Republican Party is that the people who donate and the establishment only wants certain candidates to win.
Right.
So they aren't willing to put the money into a ground game that would benefit all Republicans. The Democrats don't care if you win it, who wins, as long as you're a Democrat, right? Republicans only want certain Republicans to win. And if you're not that certain Republican, then they're not going to raise a finger to you. They're not going to set up a ground game for you. I mean,
well,
that's
not true. In George's case, when he ran for the congressional seat up here,
he had massive support from these.
I mean, he was saying, look, I can't take any more money. I can't take any more volunteers. Shift them off to other, you know, better districts because I'm overwhelmed with resources. Is that right?
I mean, here's the thing. I'd been out of the military for about 72 hours when I ran for Congress. When it came to policy and politics, I was great. When it came to campaigning, didn't really know what I was doing. Some lessons you have to learn the hard way. That being said, I'm about to make a groundbreaking, news-breaking prediction on your show that a little more than a year from now, we can revisit and then everybody can say, oh my gosh, how did George predict that? Well, it's easy. The prediction is you will have Heidi Ganahl, who is independently wealthy, and a
sort of kind of
yet to be determined. Doggy daycare, believe me, she's doing just fine.
Yeah.
You're going to have a U.S. Senate candidate who is also going to be independently wealthy.
Who's
and
that?
Together, they are going to spend millions and millions of dollars of their own money, which if they would just give that money to me, I will take it. I will slap them across the face and insult them. And they just saved basically 13 months of their lives for the same result, because they're going to spend their money on campaign consultants, television commercials, mailers, social media advertising, search advertising. And it's all going to be for naught, because your consultants and your campaign managers are not going to want to do the hard work of opening up field offices, building a ground game.
You have no idea. You have no idea what it is to do a ballot harvesting operation.
Hey.
It's incredibly time intensive. It's incredibly hard, and it is incredibly fruitful. Let's get a call in.
We've got Barney
on line two. Go ahead, Barney.
Okay, first off, old business. Your old friend Peter Boyles is a hack. He could have come out a little bit stronger for you guys when you got effed over. But, Steve, the Democrats have an unlimited supply of little socialists to do their ballot harvesting. We don't. And Dick Wadham's just not telling us. Another Cory Gardner? Are you guys effing kidding me? Here's what you do. Give us a conservative. Somebody's going to... that has a few balls, a spine, like Steve Reams. These pissant, spineless pukes are not going to cut it. We are done with the rhinos. Call them whatever you want, Dick. Pukes. Tell you what, give me a conservative. Let's go see what happens. Statewide, my ass. But give me a real man, a guy with balls. That's what we need, Steve. Ballot harvesting, yeah. That'd be awesome. We don't have time. We get off our ass and we work for a living. We don't have time to play the game that these pukes play against us. Anyway, I'm not angry, but I love all three of you. But by the way, Steve, mailers, they're an $8 piece of paper that end up in the garbage can. Sorry, but I do love you.
All right.
Thank you, Barney.
Thank you, Barney.
We got to go.
It being Parting Friday, there's nothing better than to
end on Barney.
And with Barney giving us a kick-ass speech.
So, George, we will have you back here in a year, if not before, obviously.
Well, what's the prediction? The prediction
that they're going to lose.
They're going to lose.
You spend all the money and lose, right?
And here's the thing. We'll know in December.
All right.
Well,
that's right.
I'm afraid we know now.
Well, but, George, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, you rogue guy
you
out there.
You rogue strategist, you.
We'll see you later. Appreciate your time.
Bye.
Thank you to everybody for listening. Goodbye to everyone on Zoom. ChuckandJulie.com is where you can catch all of the podcasts. I'm love to have you subscribe. We're going to start the newsletter up again, too. Thanks to Thomas and the great guys at BBS. It's Party Friday.
And we're going to start partying.
All right. We'll see you Monday.